Desolation Angel Radio, March 29th, 2020. Desolation Angel, Kip Williams with you. If you're new to the show and listening because Nicole and Kate are on tonight, this was a show that I've had for 8 years. Is on Spotify, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Apple Podcasts. It was a couple hours a week of music and me. And back in the middle of March, when it became obvious that our lives were going to be changed forever by the coronavirus COVID-19, I switched it over. It's on every night, bringing different voices in to join the chorus of voices as we all become one people, one army, trying to fight this and bring different perspectives, bring some hope, and light a candle to join all of your candles against the darkness. It's a scary time. It's an unknown time, but we will get through it. And as a result, what happens is I bring different people in every night, and we talk about different aspects of it and who they are, how they're coping with it, how they're feeling and getting through it. And tonight is two medical professionals, Nicole James, a home healthcare RN, and Kate Dalton, 40 years as a registered respiratory therapist. I throw a little music in, so let's throw some music in before Nicole's interview, and then we will launch into that. On the phone with Nicole James, as I promised in the intro, who is not only a dear friend and somebody whom I care about greatly, but also an RN and a home healthcare expert and somebody who is keeping that practice active in the middle of a hot zone. And so we'll get that perspective tonight. How are you, Nicole?
I'm doing pretty well. Thanks for having me on. This is definitely a trying time for all of us, but I think if we can all come together with our individual little bits of wisdom and tips and tricks and love, you know, we can get through this together.
I think so too, and people that have listened to the show every night hear it like a broken record, and I'm going to continue to say it. We will get through this together, and it's a we thing. We have to, because separately, if we continue to try and all be separate, we'll all die. We'll get through this together, you know?
Which, of course, is the irony, because the best thing that we can do together right now is to be separate.
Yeah, and it's really kind of cool in a way, and you saw me change my cover photo too. We are all in this together from a distance.
Right.
and the best way to love somebody right now is from at least 6 foot away. You know,
absolutely.
I just stay away from them. And so when I say we're all in this together, but I think what it's what I'm seeing starting to happen, and I could be wrong. I'm wrong often, you know, but what I'm seeing start to happen is, people are starting to either discover that they did not have an emotional and mental connection with someone and are working to develop it, or they're working to deepen it and enrichen it, whatever they have, because that's the way we have to relate to one another right now, you know, is emotionally, mentally, and that's what we got.
Absolutely. And I feel blessed in one way that this is happening now and not 20 years ago. Can you imagine even just trying to get all this amount of information out to people before everyone had the internet on their phone?
Oh, it would be, I can't even conceive of it. I really can't. The one thing that I am going to do it right up front is thank you for what you're doing. I know that you are in healthcare, you are an RN, you are on the front line, and you are one of those people proving that the essential people in this society that we lived in are nurses and doctors and grocery store clerks and truck drivers, and that's who makes everything run. Everyday people.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So what are you seeing out there on the streets of Chicago?
Well, the best thing I'm seeing on the streets of Chicago is more of the streets of Chicago. by which I mean, people a while here to really take it seriously that they need to stay home. We have a new mayor here in her first year of service, Mayor Lightfoot. I've taken to calling her Mayor Mom because she started asking nicely and then she got a little perturbed and then she finally put her mom foot down and put her mom face on, and it's made some wonderful, hilarious memes. But she's finally gotten cooperation of getting people to stay home. And I can't emphasize enough how much that single action is going to make a difference for all of us.
Yeah.
I have to go out. I have to go out and I have to do my job.
Mm-hmm.
But people staying home make my job 10 times easier.
And that's what we're seeing here, because we have somewhat the same thing. We're lucky in the state of New York. We have Governor Cuomo. You have an entire state ready to go to war with that man right now and line up behind him. But his enforcing that, because the essential people are on the street. The healthcare workers have to go to work. The first responders have to go to work. And here in Buffalo, I can't speak to New York City or Syracuse or Albany or Rochester or anywhere else. But here in Buffalo, the county has recognized those of us who are in the mutual aid network and are out doing grocery and pharmacy runs for the vulnerable populations. And so it's nice to be able to walk into a store, you know, knowing that I have to do something for a cancer patient or an 80-year-old woman and have space and to have that kind of room, because people are finally respecting it here. Now, yeah, right at the beginning, no. Buffalo did its thing, you know. It's like they went ahead and decided to try and have St. Patrick's Day parties anyhow.
Oh, my goodness. St. Patrick's Day is one of Chicago's hugest holidays. I don't know if you've been here around that time of year, but it's our Mardi Gras.
I know.
Yeah. And, you know, we canceled the official parades here and on the south side, you know, all around. All the parades were canceled. And, like, I'm sorry, idiots came out anyway and were congregating in the bars and out of the bars. This was just before they truly shut everything down. This is when they were still talking social distancing rather than stay at home.
Right, and we had exactly the same thing happen here because St. Patrick's Day in Buffalo is huge. The parades got canceled, but people still gathered on the parade route. There were three or four large parties, and it, you know, here's Ash and I. Ash and I were starting to run numbers on this back in January because we're weird geeks. I mean, you know, both of us going, right, this is not cool, and so we basically put ourselves in social isolation a week and a half ahead of everybody else, and here they are on St. Patrick's Day. And there are cases coming out of those parties that are now on vents here in Buffalo.
Absolutely. Yeah. I made my mother very upset before the stay-at-home order. I told her that we were not going to a play that we had tickets for and had been looking forward to for almost a year. And, you know, oh, you're overreacting. Oh, are you sure? I'm like, Mom, these orders are coming down, and they're coming down within the next 48 hours. Yeah. And that doesn't mean that today is safe because we don't have the order yet.
Right. That's what people didn't get. It's like, come on, use your good eye. It doesn't mean it's unsafe once the order's in place, but safe before.
There's no magic strike of the clock at which suddenly it was dangerous, or suddenly it's going to be safe again.
Right.
And that's my other concern, is if we end these isolation procedures too soon, we're going to see another spike. So
the numbers from the Spanish flu of 1918 tell people that there was three peaks.
Right.
You know, separated by months, and it's like, folks, if we pull these too soon, and this is my concern, if you gather a bunch of people in churches on Easter Sunday, if you pull down these, and I don't think Cuomo is going to go his own way. That's very obvious, and he's made that obvious. We will do in New York what we have to do to try and keep as many people safe as we can. But my concern across the country as it marches in from the East Coast, the West Coast, and up from New Orleans, you know, Chicago's a hot spot, Detroit's a hot spot.
Yep.
But, like, there's the rest of Mid-America, you know, going,
right,
folks, you have no idea what's coming at you. You know?
Right. It's coming in from all the edges.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, and also remember, not to jump topics, but we don't truly know the spread of this thing in many states where testing hasn't been good.
No, we don't. We really don't. There's a lot of people, myself included, that believe I had a version of it, since now it's apparent there's more than one strain of it.
Right.
And I believe I had a version of it all the way back in January. Based on what I know about my own health and what that month was like for me.
It's very possible. And one of the hardest things about this in the early stages of the disease is that it provokes a very generalized immune response. And I say that because none of us have any specific antibodies for this. Generalized immune response is all we have.
Yeah.
And with that comes inflammation. And inflammation can manifest in so many different ways depending on what your body is prone to.
Could you describe some of those ways?
Well, so the most common thing that people get from this is a dry cough.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, we were told a runny nose isn't part of it, and then we were told now it is. And then we were told diarrhea is not a part of it, and then we were told that it is. And there are some charts that are coming around on Facebook. I'll try to find a good one to send you after we're done with this.
Okay.
That show all the different symptoms and the frequency with which they present. And now, my particular feeling, I don't know if you know this, but before I became a nurse, I was trained in Chinese medicine and herbalism. So I have kind of a wider view of the human body than many RNs do. Mm-hmm. In Chinese medicine, we look a lot at a person's energetics, what parts of their body tend to be strong and what parts of their body tend to be influenced by disease processes. So, you know, some person might have weakness in their GI system. They're going to be the ones to get nausea and diarrhea. And we're even seeing a little vomiting now. Somebody else may have a weakness in their respiratory system, and they're the ones who are absolutely going to get that dry cough. But now we know they might also get mucus and phlegm, so that dry cough might not stay dry. It might turn into a productive cough. Hmm. And having this huge range of possible symptoms early on in the process makes it really hard to get a definitive diagnosis without a test. And our tests are not perfect. We have false negatives where it tells you you don't have the virus when you actually do. We have had some false positives where it says that somebody does have the virus and perhaps they don't. Now, yeah. Later in the disease process, by the time people are having bad chest tightness and they can't get a deep breath and they are going into the hospital, then it starts to look pretty similar for everybody. Then it turns into a lower respiratory infection. And what that means is, you and I have all had a cold, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nose, throat, you know, the back of your throat. Sometimes even the upper part of your chest will get a little tight. That's an upper respiratory infection. We've all had them. You usually recover from those without needing much. If it's caused by a bacteria, sometimes a little antibiotic, but most of the time, rest, fluids, supportive, you know, treat your symptoms will get rid of an upper respiratory infection.
Yeah.
This is going down further. This is going down into the deep parts of the lungs, into the alveoli, the little tiny air sacs, where oxygen actually crosses from the inside of your lung to the inside of your bloodstream. And when that starts to get gunked up is when you actually need to be in a hospital. Because once people reach that stage, they're crashing really fast. And when I say really fast, I mean I've seen pictures of people who are, you know, x-rays of people just several hours apart, and even a layperson can look at them and see how much more white, cloudy, dense gunk is in the lungs in just a span of 6 or 8 hours.
And I've read that. I've read that data to go, it's like, and I've read more than one report from ER docs, and of course we know about my son, you know, where, and he's seeing it. He's absolutely seeing it, where somebody who literally was sitting in ER with some chest tightness and a cough within 6 to 8 hours is crashing hard and having to be on a vent.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, unfortunately, even putting them on a ventilator is having a pretty poor success rate. Just before I got on with you, I was reading that New York City is now up to one death every 7.5 minutes.
Yeah. And that's a figure people need to know. We both know and love Jessica. And in her industry, in the trucking industry, they are delivering refrigerated trailers to New York City to act as temporary morgues. So, folks, if you don't think social distancing is, I know the weather's getting warm. I know there's a lot of people that 9 or 10 days with yourself is driving you crazy. It's going to have to be longer if you want to live and you want the people around you to live. And I don't think it's dramatic to say that. I think that is to say you might be carrying it asymptomatically and give it to someone who gives it to somebody else that it kills. You know, we have to keep the social distancing up, and people need to hear that. Say that number again for New York City right now.
What I heard just before this was that one person, I think it was about every 7.5 minutes, is dying in a New York hospital from COVID-19.
That's why social distancing is so important. We don't know a lot about this virus. We know that it's novel to us. That's why we don't know a lot about it. It's not like the flu. It's not like a cold. You know, it's brand new to the human system, and it's looking for ways to replicate, and that means destroying the host. That would be us, putting it very bluntly.
Yeah. And the most difficult thing about this from a disease containment standpoint is that you've got 5 days to 2 weeks when you are asymptomatic. You have no symptoms, but you are still contagious. So, you know, when your friend says, oh, I'm feeling fine. Yeah, they could very well be feeling absolutely fine and still be contagious.
Yeah.
That does not mean you should go over to watch a movie together.
Does it mean you shouldn't all get together for a drum circle in somebody's living room and say, hey, nobody's got a fever, everybody's feeling fine? No.
Right. And much as I would love to. You know, I haven't seen my kids in 3 weeks.
And I think people need to know that, you know?
Yeah.
When I talk about my son, he had to look at his mom and say, I won't see you for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And people that have not listened to the show, my son is an ICURN who volunteered for his hospital's coronavirus unit, knowing full well.
I sent my daughter to live with her dad, he works from home. So the two of them are cocooned in their little nest.
Yeah.
And, you know, I miss her like mad, but I would rather miss her than see her at her funeral.
That's the whole point. And when I am out doing those essentials runs, I do run across the occasional butthead. And you've seen the way I dress, and you know my decontamination procedures. You know, when I come back in, and they'll look at me and my single-use gloves and my mask and my obsessive wiping down even of food I'm taking off the shelf or off the grocery cart handle, and it has to be once every 4 days. Somebody go, you scared? I'm not scared. You know, my standard response now is not to get angry. I just look at them and ask them their name so that I can remember it when I see it on the memorial wall 2 years from now.
Ouch.
Well,
yeah, you're
cold.
Not wrong.
It's kind of cold, but it does get the point across. You know?
Yeah. You know, and panic never did anybody any good.
No.
Fear can be a motivator. I do think we should be a little afraid, in that fear will remind us to wipe things down, remind us to take our shoes off and not wear them in the house.
Yeah.
You know,
if what this does is prompt good hygiene, good practices for people, for the population, then
I'm hoping that maybe this will wipe out the handshake for good.
You and me both. I of course you know me. With my friends, I'm a hugger. With people I don't know, even on a good day, it still looks 6 foot away, okay?
Yeah.
I am capable of the Kip look, for people who know Kip.
I've seen that look.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, 6 foot's close enough. So, what do you have to say to the people that are listening to this that are understanding everything we're saying, but they're confused and they're frightened and they're scared? What do you have to say to them, Nicole?
I would say that... Let me think about that for a second, because I don't want to give a glib answer.
No, and that's not one that is glib. Yeah.
Humanity has survived plagues before, and we have done so with far less resources than we have right now. Just like Mr. Rogers said, look for the helpers.
Yeah.
Be a helper. I don't know of any better way to keep yourself calm, to keep yourself productive, to give yourself hope, than to be the person bringing that to other people. So, if you need to go to the grocery store, call 3 of your neighbors and ask if there's something you can pick up while you're out. Just the act of being generous and helping other people tends to keep people calmer and feel more empowered.
Yeah.
Because we are not powerless.
No.
We know what we need to do, and we just need to do it. And knowing that you've done everything that you can then let it go, man. I mean,
yeah.
Once you've done everything you can, you've done everything you can,
yep.
by definition.
Yep.
And so,
I mean, and the reason I'm doing some of the things I'm doing up here is specifically that, to keep myself calm.
You know? Absolutely.
I'm no hero because there's 100, 200, 300, 400 of us on the streets doing the same thing, saying, what do you need? You know, you shouldn't be out. Let me take care of it for you, you know?
And, yeah.
And we're all just everyday people. We're just average folks trying to do the right thing. And at the end of the day, I can sit down at night and sink into a chair and open a book and know I tried to do the right thing today.
Absolutely.
You know, so.
That's all any of us can ask for.
Yeah, I know. So you're taking now you're taking care of yourself really well, though. All right.
Yep.
I'm assuming yep. that, yeah.
I have a handful of masks left, including some of the N95s, thank goodness. Our agency, as most home health agencies have done, is we've switched to phone and telehealth visits for those patients that we can. You know, we have a lot of patients who just require education, who need us to check in and make sure they got their medication refills, make sure they've got food, that kind of stuff we can do over the phone.
Mm-hmm.
So those patients I'm not seeing face-to-face anymore. The ones that I have left are the ones that need hands-on care, mostly wound care, a couple of IV cases. And because I know that at least this week our gloves and masks are, you know, in short supply. Actually, I have enough gloves. Masks are what I'm most concerned about to yeah. keep my patients safe from me, just in case I have it and don't know it.
Yeah.
What I've done is I've labeled each of my masks with a patient name, and I'm reusing that mask for the same patient every time that I see them.
Yeah.
It's not ideal,
no.
but it's better than bringing the mask that I've contaminated at patient A's house into patient B's house.
And that's such a good practice. I mean, you know me well. I could go off on a whole nother tangent right now about
mm-hmm.
the lack of testing, lack of preparedness, and the shortage of masks in this country right now.
Yeah.
I could go,
the good
I could
news
go
is,
for a while. You know.
The good news is they're finally on it. I'm hearing about airplanes full of supplies that are being dropped off over the weekend. I'm hearing about companies that make other products who are switching production to masks and hand sanitizers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so this is not going to be a problem for very much longer, I honestly don't think.
Yeah.
You know, we're kicking production up and we're going to get on top of it.
I don't know about Chicago, but I can tell you in Buffalo and New Orleans, the distilleries, the micro distilleries, are
yep.
still in business. They switched over to hand sanitizer.
Here too.
Yeah.
Yep.
So there's so many people, businesses, that are all kicking in because this is a war, and we're
yep.
all in it together. And it's, you know, what can you do today? What can you contribute? Even if it's just, I tell people, plant a garden. It's spring, so we don't stress the farmers. You know, those that can. You know, those
it's funny you say that. I'm putting in a garden for the first time in over 10 years this year because I don't think I'm going to be doing my normal summer traveling.
That's one where there's a group of us where all we say very guardedly is we don't believe we'll be doing our normal summer traveling.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So I'll put a garden in. It'll give me something to occupy my time and something to fuss over. And if I'm lucky, I'll get some vegetables out of it.
And, you know, it's simple stuff. Lettuce, cucumbers, potatoes.
Yep.
I got a thing for beets. You know, give me beets. So,
beets are great.
Yeah.
Don't forget to eat the greens.
Everyone
forgets to eat the greens.
How many years did I live down in New Orleans?
Oh, well, there you go.
Long day. It's like, eat them greens. You give me some pieces of bacon, some garlic. Man, get the greens sautéed. But I'm going to say a couple things here. If you're a friend of Nicole's and not a friend of mine, what you're listening to here on Desolation Angel Radio is a show that I had for a long time. It was a music show. At the start of the COVID-19 crisis, I took the paywalls down, and this is on every night. Spotify, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and I'm trying to bring as many voices in as I can that can provide some hope and some help and some light. And it's just one candle joined with all the rest of yours, but it's free. You can find it very easily under the podcast section of each of those. And I open up the master library. So you can go back 8 years to every show and it's all there for you. And I'm trying to bring as many voices as I can in so that we hear from people all over. I'm in Buffalo. She's in Chicago. I've talked to people in, New Orleans and Boston and Oregon, just to get the voices here. Nicole is a wonderful human being and somebody I am very proud to call my friend. And you are, Nicole. You are a wonderful person and somebody I'm really proud to call a friend.
Gee, shucks.
Yeah. And I have a question for you. Because
okay.
I do 2-3 pieces of music every show now too. And, mm-hmm. and of course I have a whole thing for bands like Lucero and the Drive-By Truckers and that's what 8 years has been. But I also have a secret thing for show tunes and I know that's your big thing. So,
yes.
And Kate Dalton's coming on right after you and I'll play a song in between. So.
Okay.
Your choice. What song would you like after your interview is over?
If you can find it. There's a song that's done at the very end after the curtain call of Hadestown.
Of Hadestown? Okay.
Yes. Raise Our Cups, I think, is the official name, but I'm not sure.
I'll look for it.
But if you can find it, that okay. song just sings to my heart right now.
Okay. Yeah, I was.
And if you can't find it, then I'll tell everybody to go on YouTube and look for it because okay. it's worth it.
Yeah, if I can't find it, then folks, you're going to get a Sondheim tune of one kind or another. Just because,
absolutely.
Because it's Nicole and because it's like it has to be a show tune, you know?
Yep.
Either that. Oh, you know what? If I can't get Raise Our Cups from Rent,
525,600 minutes.
Yep.
525,000 moments owed here.
Yes. Okay.
How do we measure a year?
How do we measure a year? So, if it's not Raise Our Cups, it'll be that one.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. I love you very much. You know that, and you are a dear friend of mine. And
I love you, and I owe you so many hugs when we can finally come within 6 feet of each other.
Oh, I've had that conversation with many people. It's like people are just going to need to turn the phones off. Do not take pictures of these hugs, because.
Yep.
Yeah, this is going to be one of those. No, you just get away from here. I need to hug this person like I've never hugged them. You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, but on a personal level, on a radio level, thank you for doing this so much. On a personal level, I need you to take care of yourself. I don't just want to. I need you to take care of yourself because I need to see my friend again when this is all over. Okay?
Yep.
All right. I love you. Thank you so much. All right.
Thank you so much for having me on.
We will talk to you again soon. Okay?
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Yep. That was Nicole James over in Chicago, a good friend whom I love so much. And I get to work with at both Great Blue Heron and Brushwood. She's always at first aid and I'm always, of course, running around with a black hat on and a golf cart. my mission in life, taking care of my people. We had talked about the music and of course I opened that one with Seasons of Love. And before we go into the interview with Kate Dalton, couple of points of information here real quick. Yes, I do go out into it, not haphazardly, not because I'm bored, but because I'm part of I founded a benefit called the Nomad Project here in Buffalo a couple years ago, and then normally it operates at the holidays, taking care of homeless population, shelters, visiting hospitals. Well, me, I go do it. But as coronavirus COVID-19 came through the world, I felt it important to keep it active. And now we serve a function where I will go out if you are a member of a vulnerable population, over 70, cancer patient, immune suppressed person, transplant patient, underlying heart condition, lung condition, and do your grocery and pharmacy runs for you, because it needs to be done, and I know how to do them safely, and minimize my exposure, both in while I'm doing it and going ahead and decontaminating once I get back home, or if you've got something a little wrong with your home, I know how to get in and maintain myself with some biological integrity to make that happen. We'll talk after Kate's interview about how I do that and how that happens and how you can get a hold of me. Or if you're in an area that doesn't have that, how to build a mutual aid network that becomes part of all of that. When and as the interview ended and I was interviewing Kate, Nicole sent me a note about this next song called We Raise Our Cups, which is After the Curtain Falls on the musical Hadestown. And it's to Orpheus, who went into the underworld to bring back his love from the dead, but failed, yet we still tell his story in the hopes that maybe this time it will end differently. And I think that's all of us right now. And I think it was very appropriate that she chose that. So we raise our cups.
Pour the wine and raise a cup. Drink up, brothers, you know how. And spill a drop for Orpheus, wherever he is now. Some birds sing when the sun shines bright. Our praise is not for them, but the ones who sing in the dead of night. We raise our cups to them, wherever he is wandering, alone upon the earth. Let all our singing follow him and bring him comfort. Some flowers bloom where the green grass grows. Our praise is not for them, but the ones who bloom in the bitter snow. We raise our cups to them. We raise our cups and drink them up. We raise them high and drink them dry to Orpheus. And all of us, good night, brothers, good night.
And as I promised at the start of the show, along with Nicole, we've got Kate Dalton, one of my dearest friends, here on the phone tonight, and we're going to chat with her for a while. Kate, 30 years experience as an RRT, registered respiratory tech, and also a caregiver. So she's seeing a lot of things in what's developing and what's happening. But let's do the personal side first. And I will warn you folks that Kate and I are really good friends. So who knows where this interview is going to go, but it'll all be good places. How are you?
We're good. Just so that your listeners know, my husband, Frank, actually had a stroke about 20 years ago, a hemorrhagic stroke, and in 2008 he had an ischemic stroke. He had a heart attack sometime in between all that, but it was the best you could have. It wasn't a bad one. It was a good one. And so he is at risk for COVID-19. Mm-hmm. He also has a history of high blood pressure, which puts him at risk for COVID-19. Me, I'm the disgustingly healthy one. My dad passed in August, as you know. He was 98 years old, healthy as a horse until he had a stroke 2 years prior. And I'm pretty sure that all my genes pretty much come from him. So healthy as a horse over here. And we're doing good. You know, we're isolating, which is what everybody should be doing. We're staying home. We're watching TV. I'm packing stuff up because Kip, as you know, Frank and I are planning on moving to Maine, hopefully within a year or so. Mm-hmm. So I'm, you know, cleaning out stuff, packing up stuff, getting things done that I wouldn't do if I was not stuck at home.
Well, you do have the Acorn Channel and the BBC. And for you, yes. I know those are your forms of escapism.
So, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Reading, doing beadwork, mm-hmm. hanging out with the cats. That's, you know, mm-hmm. that's what we're doing. So we're keeping occupied and trying to keep on top of stuff.
And putting a shitload, since this is not FCC regulated. You and I can talk the way we normally talk, by the way.
Awesome.
Yeah. Folks, Kate and I are both 100% Irish. We swear a lot. Get over it fast.
Oh, yeah.
As we roll into this conversation. But, you're putting a shitload of great information out there on Facebook.
From
a medical standpoint, the things that people need to know, because there's so much misinformation floating around out there right now. And I tend to stick with what's the reality of what we're facing.
Right.
Yeah.
The medical stuff, medical stuff is a funny thing. Mm-hmm. It's terrifying for most people, because most of the time when you are confronted with it, you're confronted with it because a loved one of yours is ill. And that is not the time to learn about medical stuff. Because,
no.
you know, or you're ill, which is certainly not the time to learn about medical stuff.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to do is explain medical terminology, let people know, you know, wow, this is so real. Wow, this is, where the hell did this come from? Because this is so far out of left field, it doesn't even make sense. So I'm trying to put good information out. And I will freely admit, you know, there are times that, you know, even I get sucked in sometimes. So you got to watch. You got to watch where you're getting your information from. Look to the people who actually know what's going on. The CDC knows what's going on.
Right. And I tell people that all the time.
The World Health Organization, they know what's going on. Doctors, nurses, respiratory therapists. Uh-huh. And by the way, 40 years, not 30.
My bad. I'm sorry.
I'm older than I look.
I'll get a slap upside the head over that one at some point.
That's okay. But respiratory therapists. I will tell you that I have been listening to Governor Cuomo pretty much every day.
Oh, that's
the man is amazing, and I would hire him right now as a respiratory therapist, because he is talking my language. The man talks ventilators. He understands what a bag valve mask unit is.
And
what he's talking about.
You know, I spend my morning coffee with the governor, and you and I were both tripping out. Here he is in his press briefing, and he's showing people how to use a bag ventilator.
Yep.
Demonstrating
now,
it. Yeah.
Just so everybody knows, yes, they got 3,000 of them. Yes, they've ordered 4,000 more. Yes, you can ventilate somebody with those, but I want to make it really clear to people, A, that is not ideal by any stretch of the imagination, because it is human dependent, okay? So if the person doing it, if their hands get tired, there's going to be a problem. If they lose count of how to count for breath, so they don't have the rhythm, it can be a problem. The biggest problem is that what we're actually seeing in people who are critically ill with COVID-19 is ARDS, which is the adult respiratory distress syndrome. Basically what it means is that fluid enters what we call the interstitial spaces of the lungs. That means that your lungs, the fleshy part of your lungs, turn into bricks. It's real hard to ventilate a brick, and it sure as hell is hard to do it by hand. Now, normally, personally, I can bag somebody for 4 or 5 hours. There's no way in hell that I can bag somebody who's in ARDS for that length of time. My hands will give out. My hands will just give out.
Right.
That's why ventilators are so important.
Yeah, even somebody with my strength is not going to make 4 to 5 hours. Somebody with brick hard lungs.
No, it's like trying to bag a brick.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this because I've done it.
Right.
Ventilators are really, really important. They're life-saving pieces of equipment. The other thing I want to let people know, because I've had a number of people on Facebook ask me this question, what about CPAP devices or BiPAP devices? Basically, there's a big difference between those devices and a ventilator. And the big difference is that you can't use one for the other. It's kind of like saying, well, a boat and a car are the exact same thing. They're both modes of transportation, but you can't drive a car into the ocean and expect it to work. It's not going to work. You can't take a boat and put it on a road and go, okay, boat, let's go. It ain't going to work. And that's the difference between those two pieces of machinery. One is essentially for long-term use, and that's a ventilator. The other is primarily for short-term use. Even though in the hospital, in a hospital setting, they are used for something beyond sleep apnea, which is their primary use. They're used typically in people who have pulmonary edema, which is fluid flooding the inside of the lung, not the interstitial spaces, but the inside of the lung. And there for 2 or 3 days. It's until the person, until you can drain fluid off, you give people Lasix, you make them pee, and the fluid comes off, and boom, they're good again. Okay? You can't do it long term. You're sure they don't have the alarm system. They don't have the ability to ventilate. The other thing is that one is invasive, the other is not. CPAP and BiPAP are a mask. You slap a mask on somebody's face, you hook them up to a CPAP or a BiPAP machine, and away you go. And that's important to know the difference, because the fact that it's non-invasive means that you cannot seal, you cannot guarantee a seal. So you have an, what is essentially an open system. If that person develops a leak because the mask shifts because they turn their head or they're trying to pry it off, all of their exhaled breath is going out into that room. How is COVID-19 transmitted?
Person to person.
Droplets. Yep. Droplets from your breath. And it's not just coughing or sneezing. It's talking. It's exhaling. It's if you smoke a cigarette, okay, if you're vaping, anything, if you go, oh, you know, because you just picked up a big Tucker tote full of stuff and it was heavy, and you put it down and you exhale, or you sigh because you saw something, or something strikes you, and you or you're tired of something and just kind of, oh, that kind of thing. Yeah, that's all. You, when you breathe out, all of your breath has droplets in it. So now imagine those droplets under pressure being pushed out of the mask. That's a dangerous situation, and it's a dangerous situation for any of the caregivers that are taking care of this person. That's a problem. It's also a problem because you can't seal, so you're not going to really be ventilating a person, aside from the fact that you really can't ventilate a person with a CPAP or BiPAP device. You're not going to be able to guarantee that they would be ventilated. That's why what we do is we take a tube. We put it in people's trachea. We go in through the mouth, into the trachea. The bottom of that tube, there's a balloon. You fill up the balloon with air, and the tube stays put. You tape it in place, and you now have a closed system, which is really important. It's also really important because what it does is it guarantees how much air, which is what we call tidal volume, goes into the person. You can guarantee the respiratory rate, which means how fast it's going in, as far as, you know, the timing of it. It's also regulating the pressure that it's going in. And that's really important with people who have ARDS, because pressure is a big deal, because it's going to take a tremendous amount of pressure to move those lungs.
Yeah.
It's going to take a tremendous amount of pressure to get the oxygenated air from the machine through the fluid so that there's enough oxygen in the blood to keep your vital organs going. And that's your brain and your heart.
Yep.
I know this is sounding really, really technical, and I know it's sounding really, really complicated. And yeah, it is, but if you think of it as a balloon, it's a balloon. Your lungs are like a balloon. The air goes in, the air goes out. When the air goes in a normal person, oxygen goes out to your blood. The CO2 that everybody breathes out, that comes out of the blood and into your lungs so that you can breathe it out. It's just that simple. But when you have complications because your balls are like bricks, it makes it that much harder. And that's why this is really, when somebody gets on a vent, it's like, oh my God, this is going to be tough.
So let's run the numbers down for people. And here's why sure. I say let's run the numbers down. Yes, probably because it's a novel virus, right now the figures look like, yeah, I think we all will eventually get it. Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
Now,
absolutely.
The other figure is that seems to be holding steady is 80% of people will be asymptomatic or will have mild symptoms and recover at home.
Right.
Okay. Now,
right.
That leaves another 20%. Okay. Sounds small, but if you think about the whole American population, that's huge. So another 20% are going to need hospital care. What's the figure past 20% of those who go into critical care and need that vent?
They're predicting a number. But we don't know.
Right.
And that's one of the biggest problems with this virus. You called it a novel virus. And for people who don't know what a novel virus is, it means, hi, look at me. I just sprang up and I'm here now.
Right.
You know,
I'm brand
it's
new.
It's the uninvited guest. You have no idea where this thing came from. You really don't.
Yeah.
It popped up. I think it's been here since December.
I think, really and truly,
November, December, I think we started seeing it.
Until they have serological tests, which we are starting them in New York.
Right.
I'm not going to know. And you know exactly where I'm going with this, but you remember me back in January.
I have two friends in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
We have two friends in Canada who both are looking back, you know, it's hindsight being 2020, mm-hmm. are both looking back going, these symptoms? I have a lot of these.
And that's what I'm doing now is looking back at January when I was talking to you going, I wonder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And I will tell you, I mean, there, you know, here I am, respiratory therapist, 40 years experience, acute care.
Mm-hmm.
There are days when I sit here going, is my head stuffed up? Is it post-nasal drip? Because here's our other complication. And it's a complication that I think a lot of people haven't really thought of. You know what time of year it is?
I know exactly what time of year it is because I wake up in the morning and go, am I dying? Or is this just tree sex?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, I'm here just in, you know, I'm in Connecticut. I'm in coastal Connecticut. I'm in Milford. I'm between Bridgeport and New Haven. And it's spring here. My daffodils are up in blooming.
It's buffalo. My crocuses and daffs are up.
Yep. Uh-huh. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, everything's coming out now. And all those people who have allergies, unfortunately, are going to be going, is this allergies or is this that thing?
Right.
You know, that's going to kill me. You know, first off, it's not going to kill everybody.
No, it's not.
And that's a good thing. That's good. Is it going to kill people? Yes. And we know that it's going to kill people because it already has.
And that really sucks. The figure
and
that,
it really,
right.
really makes me angry because losing a patient always makes me angry because I just wish we didn't have to, ever.
The figure that Nicole gave me just now, because I was talking to her before you.
Yeah.
Now, New York City is a leading indicator like New Orleans.
This is
what I want the rest of the people in America to hear. We're not at our apex yet.
No.
We are 14 to 21 days away from our apex.
Yeah.
And someone is dying every 7 minutes in a New York City hospital right now.
Yep.
So when we tell you to stay home and break the chain of transmission, that's why. You might be one of the 80%. More than likely. You might be one of the 80% that recovers, but there's that possibility of being one of the 20%.
It makes no sense to me. Absolutely no sense to me that anyone with half of a brain cell would put themselves out there and put themselves at risk. And not only put themselves at risk, but put their friends and their family at risk.
And that's the one that gets to me and you know it.
I don't understand it. I can't wrap my brain around it. Frank and I have been stuck in the house for like a month.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're here and I'm looking at another month, 6 weeks and I'm going, okay, well, let's see. What can I do to get done today? You know, this is the way our life is now. It's not going to be like this forever, but it is, but the thing, and you know, the thing of it is Had we done this sooner, we'd be almost done with it now.
Right.
That's the thing that gets me.
And now it's going to be extended. Yeah,
you know, if we had put the stuff in place, if we had kept the kids home from school, because kids are plague monsters, okay? They carry everything. I swear they get born and they have everything, and they love giving it to everybody else.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, and whatever they don't have, they pick up in school. They pick it up in nursery school. They pick it up in grammar school, and they spread it. This is why beginning of the year, kids get sniffles.
Right.
This is why the beginning of the year, we see an increase in people who are grandparent age getting ill. Mm-hmm. Because kids.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you got the kid, you drop them off at grandma. Well, guess what? Now, it's not just a little cold.
Right.
This is going to kill people. And
This is not a cold.
Say,
this is not the flu.
It's not the flu. And having the flu vaccine is not going to help you. I've seen that on Facebook. No, it's not going to help you. There is no vaccine for this yet.
No, there isn't.
Having the pneumonia shot is not going to help you.
Because
the pneumonia shot, and this is the other thing that's a real problem, the pneumonia shot is for bacterial pneumonia.
Right.
It does not cover viral pneumonia.
And that's
viruses
the thing people need to understand.
Viruses and bacteria are different.
Right. Two different animals. A virus is a piece of RNA
that
has no politics, doesn't care about your opinion, really doesn't care what race you are or where you come from.
Doesn't care if you're
a Republican or a Democrat or a Christian or a Muslim or a pagan. Doesn't care
if you're gay, straight, man, woman,
care.
Which town you live in, what your house looks like. It doesn't care.
It's a piece of RNA that wants to replicate and is looking for a suitable host to do that and will replicate until
period.
It kills the host.
Yeah,
end
period.
Story.
And that's what it's doing.
Yeah.
Or the host fights it off and kills it.
Right,
and
one or two.
That's, you know, that's what we're all hoping for.
And being real blunt, if you do wind up in that critical care and you do wind up on a vent and you're not someone who recovers, your last moments on earth are not going to be with your family.
No. They're
going to be with somebody like Kate, a stranger.
Yeah. Yeah. I will put in this word because this is what I did. And I know a lot of my colleagues when I was working did the same thing. We try not to let people die alone,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not your family. I will be as loving and as sympathetic and as empathetic and as comforting as I can be, but I am not your family.
Yeah.
And if you have a child, that child gets sick and has to go to the hospital, you will not be going with that child.
Because it's an isolation ward.
You will not be going.
Yeah.
Because if you do and you do not have it, you will get it and you will be a further drain on the system. What they're doing, it sounds really heartless. It really does, but I get it.
I understand.
From that point of view, I get it. I absolutely get it.
My son had to look at his mom, and my people that have listened to the show, and you know about my son, my oldest son.
Yep.
ICURN, who volunteered for the coronavirus unit, had to look at his mother and say, I will not see you for 6 months.
Yeah.
And that's his work. Just saying, okay, I'm not going to be able to see you for 6 months. I want you to know that.
Yeah, I saw on Facebook my former coworkers mm-hmm. at Greenwich Hospital. Posted a picture of all of them in the lounge, and they're all like done up in their, you know, masks mm-hmm. and their booties and their hats and, you know, their gowns and the whole nine yard. And, you know, they posted a picture and they're all like smiling and waving, and I'm looking at all of them and I broke down in tears.
Oh yeah.
And broke down in tears because I'm sitting there going, God, I just hope you all make it through.
Right. And that's, I mean, as a father, if people don't think every morning I wake up and have a moment,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, then they don't know me.
No, and we've had healthcare workers die from it already. There was a healthcare worker in New York who died.
Yes.
Several nurses, evidently, have passed from this.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So
it's a thing that very few of us have ever thought about facing.
Right. So this is not a conversation about what you can do if you get it, folks. If you get it, you are either going to wind up in a hospital or not. The question is, what are you going to do to not get it and to not make sure other people don't get it? And that's social distancing.
Absolutely. Stay away from everybody.
Right.
I have actually been checking in on my neighbors, and here's how I do it. I stand on my front porch and I holler.
Yep.
Because I see my neighbor across the street, and like, hey, Joan, how you doing? you guys okay over there? Do you need anything?
Yeah.
And, no, we're good. How are you guys doing? Yeah, we're good. You know, I talked to my nail girl through the door, through a closed door, mm-hmm. through the screen door that has the windows in. Jess, are you doing okay? How are you feeling? You doing all right? Because she's handling mail all day.
Yeah.
Yeah, my dad was a mail carrier. I know what they do. Right. I know what it's like to walk a route. I know what it is.
And we know its half-life, even on cardboard, is 3 days.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things that I did was because I took care of my dad and because I take care of my husband, I had some gloves. So I pulled some gloves out. I stuck them in a bag, in a Ziploc bag. I put them in the mailbox. And I said to her, here, you know, we are healthy. We do not have it. However,
yeah.
use these. Now, for people who are not taking care of patients, if you are using gloves, I would say, and this is what I would do, and I could be very wrong on this, but this is just for like home use, mm-hmm. like it's just you. I would, when you're done doing whatever it is you're doing, I would leave those gloves on your hands and I would wash your hands.
Oh, yeah.
And I know everybody says 30 seconds. Everybody says 20 seconds. No, 30. 30 right. seconds. 30 right. seconds, because 20 seconds gets rid of 90% of the bugs and germs and crap on your hands.
Mm-hmm.
30 seconds gets rid of 99%.
Yeah.
I'll take that extra 10 seconds. Thank you.
Yep. When I'm doing essentials runs, pharmacy and grocery for the vulnerable population around here, my gloves, yes, I have single-use gloves. I also have another pair of gloves. They come off, and they get hit with a bleach spray and are on the porch.
Yep.
And everybody in the neighborhood knows, don't touch Kip's gloves.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So. I've had questions about people using UV lights to try to sterilize masks.
Uh-huh.
And there are hospitals that are doing it. The two sources of lights of UV lights that are out in the community, tanning salons, because that's what you're laying under. Mm-hmm. And people may not know this, but if you go get your nails done, like I love to go get my nails done. And my salon is closed right now, so I am stuck doing my own nails. Oh my God. But if you go to a nail salon and you get gel nail polish applied, you have to cure that.
Under
a in a little
light.
Device that has UV lights. They're small but mighty. Yeah. So I would say yes. And you know what? There's also UV lights. Some people have machines at home to clean their CPAP masks. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
If it's good enough to clean a CPAP mask. Now, if it was me, if the manufacturer says, oh, put your CPAP mask in and, you know, leave it in there for 5 minutes, or you press a button and it automatically goes off. I'd be pressing that button until it was like 15 minutes, 20 minutes. I just keep pressing that button so that you know that you have sterilized that mask or cleaned that mask mm-hmm. to the best of your ability.
Yep.
It doesn't like to cling on fabric.
Yeah. Ash and I have bottles of diluted bleach spray all over the house.
Yep. They say 5 tablespoons in 1 gallon of water. Yeah. I'm a big believer in, you know, with some stuff like this, if a little is good, more is better.
Oh, so am I. Yeah.
You know, 10 tablespoons. There you go.
10, there you go. Yeah, that's my new kink. Oh, baby, the smell of bleach turns me on. Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing is people are freaking out. Oh, my God, it lasts 3 days on a surface. Yes, that is correct. Unless you freaking clean it. So freaking clean it. Don't be, what are you doing? You're waiting for it to, you know, stand up and, you know, do a tap dance for you? Just clean the damn thing.
That and I stocked up on Dr. Bronner's. You know?
It's
been 15 years since I read that label, and now I have time to do it. I read that whole label again the other night and went,
oh my God.
Shit, this man knew what was coming. Oh my God.
I will tell you, you know, and the other thing is, if you're at home, you don't need hand sanitizer.
No.
There's no reason for you to have hand sanitizer. Leave the hand sanitizer for the healthcare professionals like Nicole, who is out in the public. Man, she is my hero. She goes out into the public because she sees patients at home. Leave her the hand sanitizer.
Right.
Use soap and freaking water, man.
Well,
just wash your hands for 30 seconds, front and back. sing a song, do whatever you have to do, 30 seconds.
Yeah, well, we're of course in Buffalo, which, you know, Buffalo doesn't drink at all. But not the microbreweries, but the micro distilleries all down here in South Buffalo are still open.
They're all making hand sanitizer.
Right.
That rocks. Yeah. That totally rocks. You know, it has really impressed me.
Right.
It's really impressed me.
You were talking about
people have stepped up and done stuff like this.
Oh, there's so many good people in the world, Kay, and so many people who are willing to step out there and help. I mean, yeah, a couple of weeks ago, I was one of the only people out there going, if you're in the vulnerable population, I'll get your groceries and pharmacy, because everybody wanted to do their own. And suddenly I've got this whole little army and team around me, and the Buffalo Mutual Aid Network has sprung up. There's so many good people, and I'm seeing it everywhere, New Orleans and New York City, you know.
If you're out there and you can't do what Kip does, that's okay.
That's fine.
That's okay. Do something else. There are other things you can do.
Make masks.
If all you do is stand on your front porch and go, hey, are you okay? Do you need anything? I heard, you know, I saw on Facebook you were out of flour. I have flour. Do you want some flour?
And you know,
it cracks me up. People are out there rushing around buying all this stuff. It's like, why do you need 15 pounds of flour? Well, I'm going to make bread. Have you ever made bread before?
Don't start
No.
Me.
Okay. You know what? Don't do that.
Don't start me. I want to hold a class just for guys and men and tell them, your cover's been blown. Why? Because I've been single a long time. I've cooked for a long time. And all I have to do is look in your cart and at the panicked look you have on your face looking at your phone to realize you've never cooked.
Yeah. I know.
Don't even try to fake it, you know?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I know.
Yeah.
So I know.
But, I mean, you're right, because we're all in this together. This is a World War II situation. This is a war.
Is.
And we are an army, and no contribution is too small.
That's right.
No contribution is meaningless. Whatever anyone can do, even if it's just to check on your neighbor, it means something. Because you know what? It's okay to be scared. It's okay to be overwhelmed. I mean, and I've had to really, really think about that over the last couple of weeks. Not everybody's wired like me.
No,
you know?
No. In fact, most people are not, and most people are terrified. So
and
the best
okay
way
to
pull out of that, but the best way to pull out of that is to do something.
Right.
You know, put on a pair of put on a plastic bag. You don't have gloves? That's okay. You got a Ziploc baggie? Put on a Ziploc baggie. Go to your neighbor's door, knock on the door, and then back up 8 feet.
Yeah. Eight,
and when they come
six.
To the door, you look at them and you go, I'm your next door neighbor. You probably don't know who I am. I'm just asking, do you need anything?
And
I'm just checking up to make sure that our neighbors are okay, that our neighborhood is okay.
Because
my name is whatever my name is, and I don't know who you are, but I'm just checking up.
And that's
because
one of the changes I hope comes out of this.
Oh, yeah, I hope so, too. And you know what? In your neighbor, in everybody's neighborhood, there's got to be one, two, or three elderly people who can't get out for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Okay. Check on them. Ask them if they need something.
We know who ours are on this block. And
right.
Now it's to the point where there's designated days for certain people to go check.
Yeah. Man. Well, I mean, I'm Frank and I are lucky because the neighborhood that we're living in is actually the neighborhood that I grew up in. I have been in this house since I was a year old. So I know my neighbors.
Right.
Most of them. There's a couple I don't know because, you know, people die, people move, whatever.
Right.
But most of my neighbors I know, and I'm going, are you guys okay?
Yeah.
Hi, it's the crazy woman over there. Are you okay? I just want to check. Make sure everybody's okay.
And,
you know,
that's
what you do.
And I imagine most people listening to this know me, but for those who don't know me, trust me, the look matches the voice. You know, and so there are people that literally go, that's Kip. He's got this under control. And it's like, it's just what I look like. And I was thinking about that today because you and I talk about bloodlines all the time. And, you know, it's like, I got one son that's disaster response. Another son that's ICURN. My nephew is getting ready to launch something huge with Menards tomorrow to help. My brother-in-law was on the phone with Washington, you know, all day Friday, finding a mistake in a bill and trying to get it corrected. It's like, and I realized my family was wired for this.
Yeah.
And not everybody is, but part of that job is to stand there and hold a hand out, in this case, from 8 foot away.
Yep.
And say, grab my hand emotionally and mentally. We can get through this.
Yeah.
We can do this.
And we will.
And
you
we
know,
will.
It's one of the things that in a lot of ways, I'm glad my dad is not here to see this.
Yeah.
In another way, I miss the hell out of him.
Oh, yeah.
And I miss him because the man was born in 1921. He was 8 years old when the real Great Depression happened.
Yeah.
He fought in World War II.
Yeah.
He was Army Air Corps.
Yep.
He saw Korea, lived through Korea, lived through Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
The first call I made on the morning of 9/11 was to my father.
Oh, yeah.
Dad, what do? Should I be packing Frank up? Should we be packing up the cats? You should be heading for Maine. No, no, no. It's going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Just relax. If it looks like that, I will call you. And I knew he would.
Yeah.
If there was going to be a problem, he would call.
Right.
So I packed a couple of bags and waited. Just waited.
Yep.
You know.
It's
that voice. And I've also seen it on Facebook. One of our friends.
Yeah.
Her father. She calls him Mr. Daisy, and he's hysterical. He's a sweetheart, tiny little guy. He's awesome, and he right now is in a nursing home, and she's talking to him on the phone all the time. And she said, "Mr. Daisy says it's going to be okay." He's 96 years old.
Yeah,
these people have seen it.
Right.
They have lived through things like this
and
before.
Richard and I talked about
this.
That last week when his landlord. You know, and 9/11 just went, oh, no, I'm checking on you. I've been through this kind of thing before.
Yeah.
You know, and so
yeah.
We'll all get through. I think about my own family. It's like my dad fought in Korea. You know, my grandpa hitched a ride on the rails at 13 at the height of the Great Depression and found a job in Detroit, you know, because
yeah.
There was too many kids to feed and fought in World War II.
Yep.
You know, we will, and my family has always, it's kind of like, man, I best get it, because I was thinking, I best get my garden in, or my grandma Gladys is going to kick my ass.
Yep.
You know, because
yep. If you can do a garden,
yeah.
You should.
Yep.
Victory Gardens during World War II, they mm-hmm. weren't just something for people to do to keep them busy.
No.
You grew food. You weren't growing flowers, you were growing food so that you wouldn't starve.
Right.
All the food was going to the boys who were fighting. Nylon stockings. Women went without nylon stockings because they were real nylon in those days because they needed the nylon to make parachutes.
Yeah.
Gasoline was rationed because we needed the gasoline to drive the boats, the trucks, the jeeps, the planes. Needed
yep.
gasoline. Gasoline was rationed.
When I worked for Ford in Detroit, I worked in their largest plant, 2 square miles under one roof, which was mm-hmm. the tank plant in World War II. It wasn't cars. It was a tank
right.
plant.
Right.
You know, and everybody pitched in. And I think that's my point. We will get through this together from 8 foot apart.
But
we have to do
it together.
That's what I mean.
We have to do it together.
We can't do it individually. We have to get through it together.
For a very long time, we have been living our lives individually mm-hmm. and alone.
Yep.
And I think the one thing that I hope comes from this is that stops. That
yeah.
we reach out to people, that we aren't isolated in our homes, that we're not just looking at Facebook, we're not just checking our phones all the time, that we're actually living a life and we're including human beings.
Oh, yeah.
Where you sit down and you look them eye to eye and you're having a conversation.
Yeah, Ash and I are on the porch. That's where
we
are.
When your neighbor, your next door, you know, when your next door, I remember when I was growing up, our next door neighbor was a lovely woman whose husband verbally abused her and at times physically abused her. I was, as a child, unaware of this. But I know she came over 2, 3, 4 times a week and would have tea with my mother. And there were times when my mother would send me outside so that they could talk.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother talked her through that. And when this woman passed, I was there for her because my mother was living in Maine And I think my mother may have passed by that point also. I think my mother had already passed, but I was there for her because she was like another mother to me. You reach out to people, and I'm really hoping that that's what happens.
I am too, because what I saw, and you and I had this conversation the other day, there is pre-COVID-19 and there's post-COVID-19, and it's a marker point in everybody's life. And if you think you're not pre-COVID-19, post-COVID-19, you're full of shit, whoever you are.
Oh, yeah.
I mean it.
Oh, yeah.
Because everything has changed.
This is a moment. It's a moment in history. And this is why I say it repeatedly until I think people want to puke because I'm saying it so much. Those who forget history are doomed to repeat it.
Right.
If you want to look back at what it was like, now it's not like the 1918 flu epidemic, but it is.
Right.
Because it's, oh my God. They did not have the equipment we have. They did not have the technology we have. They did not have the knowledge of anatomy and physiology that we have. They did not have the knowledge of biochemistry that we have now. They did not have the machinery, and they sure as hell did not have the workforce or the experience to deal with that pandemic.
And
that was a global pandemic, too.
They did not have the supercomputing power to unfold the protein in the virus. Or the ability to compute instantly its trajectory and track and connections.
Right.
And we got all those tools.
It was terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
It was. And so if you're looking for another point in time where a bug, a virus, totally disrupted the world, that's the one to look to.
Yeah.
1918. Do the research. And you know one of the things that they found, and this goes for any virus, two of the biggest enemies of a virus, fresh air and sunshine.
Yep.
When they started putting patients in tents outside, they started to get better.
Right.
And all of a sudden they realized, outside, they're getting better.
Now, on that fresh air and sunshine,
What sunshine does is basically a virus is that piece of RNA, and it's wrapped up in a waxy outer shell. Well, you know what happens when you apply heat to wax? It melts. And then the whole thing falls apart.
Yeah.
So if you can get out in the sunshine, stand on your back freaking porch, open your window and hang your head out.
Now that
and
does
get
not mean
some sunshine.
That does not mean as the weather turns, get together with your friends out in the park. Get your own little solo butt out there in the fresh air and sunshine.
Yep. You know? Get your own little solo butt all by yourself.
Yeah.
And if you want to talk to your friends, you keep them at eight feet away.
Yep.
You know, or as our friend Eric Vasquez likes to say, and I do love this, how far away should I be from my friends? Well, you know what? A coffin is about 6 foot long. About that far.
Yeah.
And that's a very good, that's a really good analogy.
Good analogy.
And it's also a really, really good reminder of how serious this shit is right now.
It's serious.
Because it is serious shit.
Because it does kill people. Understand that, folks. It's not going to get... Yes, 80% will have mild symptoms, but right now we doubled the death toll in this country overnight last night.
Yeah.
That's how fast it's accelerating. So, you know, be part of that solution and be part of that solution by being at least 8 foot apart from one another. And if you have to go out, practice good, clean behavior and decontamination procedure when you come back in. You know,
absolutely.
Be aware of everything. And Kate talked about checking in. Kate's one of the people that has to check in with me every day, folks. She knows that I need to get a text. There's this group of like, you know, maybe 27, 28 people that know they have to text me once a day, you know, and let me know we're doing fine because that's just how I operate. But, you know, I'm so grateful to have you in my life, you know.
And we are blessed to have you. And thank you for checking up on us.
Hey,
it's kind of a funny situation. Most of our friends go to camp.
I know.
They're from all over the country.
Yep.
And in my own hometown, I do have friends, but not very many.
Right.
I've noticed over the years because most of my friends were at work, you know, because, you know, you're working. And I work nights, so I was sleeping during the day when people were awake. Most of our friends are you know, up north. They're at Buffalo. They're in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
You know, they're all over the country. And so it really is wonderful to know that there's people out there who are going, hey, you guys okay? Check right. in. I got yelled at because I didn't call him or text him for like 3 days. I got yelled at.
Yes, I did. I yelled at her. I mean, it's like I say, there's a group of people who, and I'm so grateful for the last 2-3 years of my life, because there's one group of people that supported me through it and another group that got me ready for this and did not realize. And I was so angry. You remember that? And
oh, I do.
I realized today it was like everybody played their part.
Yeah.
They helped get me ready to do I mean, I was born this way. I've always done what I do, but they helped get me ready right on time.
Yep.
You know? And I'm so grateful for that. And I'm grateful for you being in my life, you and Frank. I love you so much. All right.
We love you too. And thank you for everything that you're doing out there.
Yeah.
Because I know you're doing a lot of important work. There's a lot of stuff that I wish I could do. I mean, they're calling for people to go back to work, people who are retired. And I will tell you, if I could, I would.
I know you
would. But I have Frank. And Frank is my number one priority.
Has to be.
And me? You know, he has to be, because if there's not me, who's going to take care of him?
Well, using a really cheesy comic book analogy, you know, Cap had to go away for a couple of years. And it was time for me to step back out of the shadows. And say, all right, we're going to do this. Avengers Assemble. Let's go.
Yep. And that's pretty much what it is.
Yeah.
So I will try to keep disseminating. Oh, there is one piece of information I want everybody to know that they have found is erroneous. If you're taking NSAIDs, like aspirin and ibuprofen, there's was a whole big thing. Oh, don't take those. They're going to kill you. You're going to have a cytokine storm. Yeah, no. Okay. Throw that out. You got a headache, take a freaking ibuprofen.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got a headache, take an aspirin. You got aches and pains, take whatever you need to take for your aches and pains.
Right. And
don't worry about the NSAIDs. It's okay. Right. You can take those now.
And from a medical standpoint and a holistic standpoint, take your vitamins, get the fresh air.
Yes.
Get a decent, don't be eating nothing but heat and serve pizza. Keep your immune system up and where it needs to be. So, and like I say, for me anymore, I don't use the word if. When you get it, you're able to fight it. Keep your immune system where it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
You know?
And, you know, the other thing is that once it gets through this initial stage, typically what most viruses do, and I won't carve it in stone, but typically what most viruses do is if you get the virus and you and I are hanging out, then I'm going to get the virus too. But I probably won't get it quite as bad as you.
Right.
And then if Frank gets it, he'll get it, but it won't be quite as bad as me. And then the next person, it kind of weakens as it goes down the chain.
It becomes a weakened load. Yeah.
Right. And so what's going to happen with the, I'm going to predict this. What will happen with this, I truly believe this, and it's going to take a while. It's going to take months, okay? It's not going to be like next week. Don't be looking at your watches.
Five months at the least up here in New York. We know that.
Yeah. But once it goes through that initial, this initial stage, when it comes back around, and it will, it's going to come back. Look for it. You know, you put it on your calendar. Start looking for it around September, October.
Yep. That's
what it's not going to be as bad.
Look for a second wave. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not going to be as serious.
Yeah.
Don't be thinking, oh my God, I'm 65 and I'm going to die. And certainly do not be sitting there thinking, well, I'm 20, so it's not going to touch me. That's crap.
Both of those things.
Because most of the cases are between 20 and 54.
Yeah, they really are. So, that's the highest number of cases.
Yeah. So remember that. And you know what's really interesting? Flu pandemic, 1918.
Yeah.
Same age group.
Yep.
Same age group.
Yep.
Yes, older people got it and died. Yes, kids got it and died. But the biggest chunk of people
that got it,
20 to 40.
Right.
20 to 40 years old.
Which means quit sneaking over to your friend's house because you're bored, and quit trying to find a place that's near your neighborhood bar that's closed and make it be a neighborhood bar. Stop that.
Yeah, don't be doing that crap.
Yeah.
Don't be doing that crap.
All right. Hey,
all
I
right,
love
my
you.
Darling,
I will talk to you tomorrow, I'm sure. Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
Since we do an everyday thing.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me to do this. I really, really appreciate it. Frank sends his love, too.
Well, thank you for putting the information out there. I really appreciate it.
We're trying.
All right.
Okay. All right, honey. You take it easy. Take care.
All right. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Okay?
Okie doke. Bye.
Bye. So thank you for spending the evening listening to us here, myself and Nicole and myself and Kate. A lot of valuable information there. And hopefully for a lot of you, familiar voices in a time that seems uncertain and at times it seems really scary, because that's really the whole purpose of this, is to provide connection and community and to provide a connecting point. I want to hear from you. You can find me on Facebook, Kip Williams. Trust me, anyone who knows me will tell you the profile picture looks like The Voice. Kip Williams in Buffalo, or Desolation Angel Radio, or The Nomad Project, because I want to hear from you. I want to hear what you have to say in this time that's going to change who we are and how we live forever. There's pre-COVID-19 and post-COVID-19. And if you haven't recognized that yet, you will. I believe we will get through this. You know, I'm out there doing my thing. I'm just somebody who's always wanted to do the right thing, and I believe you are too. Wherever you are, you can help, whether it's checking on your neighbors or doing a grocery run or a pharmacy run or making a mask or even just getting out there in the sunshine and looking and not being afraid, but still managing to keep that 6 to 8 foot distance from people until we get through this. I've never believed in institutions and processes and systems. I believe in people. I believe in individuals. And for the most part, they haven't let me down. You haven't let me down. And we can do this, all of us together. If you need me, my name is Kip Williams. My phone number is area code 504-717-8386. And just as I picked music that was appropriate for Nicole and her love of show tunes, Kate and I are both 100% Irish, and there's no way I could close the show. I mean, yes, I have another piece of music past what you're about to hear, but there's no way I could close the show without playing this one particular piece before I play the closing song. I will talk to you again tomorrow night. Remember, this is free. It's a way to stay in touch, a way to stay connected, a way to hear people that you love. So we will get through this. We will.
So much. We leave you with one last thought. We are entering a dark time. It's all right. It's only temporary. It's more important than ever that we stick together and that we love each other. And together we will find our way out of the darkness. Thank you so much. Thank you, Peter. Thank you. Cypress of Soul. We love you, baby. We'll be back.